Hey guys, I just wanted to give you a little heads up before we start this show. The audio on the interview is kind of not very good. For whatever reason, TalkShoe kind of cut in and out and in and out. So it is a little bit hard to hear during the interview, but we just wanted to give you a little heads up on that. It's really, really good information, so hopefully you can stick with it, and we can maybe get Crashmore back in the future to record some more. But it was a really good episode, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. And again, we want to apologize up front for the audio quality in this post.
You want to know how to find it, seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab, but come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 168, Caching by Bicycle, recorded live on August 24th, 2010. I'm your host, XBunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call our line, 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, and we love hearing from our listeners, and that number is 206-350-3GPS. And we're all on social media, twitter.com/GC Podcast and Facebook at facebook.com/geocachingpodcast. This episode is sponsored by listeners like you. Thank you for making this possible. Daryl, welcome back. It's been a week. We don't have Montu again this week. His hands, I guess, are hurting him really bad. But welcome back. How have you been?
Oh, not too bad. Yeah, hopefully his issues with his hands clear up soon, and he'll be feeling up to joining us again. And if not, at least to going and hitting some caches, because he's down in that warm Florida weather, which is finally, I think, going to start cooling down for him. So maybe he can get out.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'm sure, you know, for him, at this time when we're talking about getting all these numbers, he can't get those. So it'll be nice to actually, you know, have some stuff done for him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and about the only caching that I did this week was, I didn't do any caching, but the video review that I did way back in the spring on the Explorers GC is now out in the premiere episode of Ice and Rye's new podcast, which is Track Files. And that's actually going to replace the video zine. So if anyone's subscribed, you'll automatically get it. But it's now Track Files with a slightly different format. Now, I don't think you've had a chance to download it and check that out, have you?
No, I haven't. I actually just saw that he has a new one. I didn't even know until today that he had a new one coming out. But you know what? I saw it today, and I haven't looked at the video. I looked at the website, but I'm excited to look at it. I'm probably going to check it out here tonight after the show.
Yeah, and I'm sure not too much new information for you, because we do this show every week as well. And you know, it's old hat for stuff like the review now, and I've got to get him a new review. But yeah, you know, I'm always excited to see that come out. Yeah, it's just yet another cool video thing that I can download and put on my iPod and walk away with. Now,
I was just going to say, yeah, you know, I'm catching up on my podcasts too, because I, for a while, my computer was down, and it still is down, but I moved my iTunes to a different computer so I can actually download and get my podcasts again. So I'm just catching back up on podcasts this week too.
Yeah, well, and you know, I kind of wish that iTunes would go away, and we could just do all of the pod catching on our iPods, but sadly Apple doesn't allow for that. So it's one of the reasons I'm kind of looking for Android in the future. But I did actually have plans to go caching this week. Sadly, they were kind of foiled because I had to make a couple of trips to REI with tire problems on each of my two bikes. Both of my bikes blew the tube on the rear tire, and I had other things I needed done at the same time. And yeah, I just don't have time to work on my own bike anymore. So it's just easier for me to drive over there. But when both of them are down, it's a little bit aggravating.
Yeah, and you know, you had to get your bike fixed before this episode, right?
Well, I had to get it fixed before this episode. And a lot of that was just because, well, you know, we were planning on taking the bikes this weekend and doing something.
Well, good to see
you. So what's up on your end?
Well, I've been working on a lot of different website stuff. I'm kind of creating a a side project, a different podcast. So I'm working on some other website stuff for that. And then also, we found out this week that my son Eli might have a gluten allergy. So that's been a huge like thing for us to kind of take in and digest and just try to figure out what he can and can't eat. And, you know, but it's been cool. I've seen a lot of support for it. You know, I Twittered out the other day that he may have a gluten allergy, and, you know, I've seen huge support of people that I had no idea had gluten allergies saying, yes, I have it, or my dad has, you know, things like that. And just, it may not be the easiest thing to start out, but there's a lot of, you know, support out there. And so it's been cool to see all that support come in and help us, you know, out and trying to figure out what he can and can't have.
Yeah. One of the folks I work with actually has the problem, and, you know, it's not that tough anymore to deal with it. Not like it had been, but boy, can it be expensive.
Yeah. That's from what I hear. We're still kind of trying to do some tests and things like that to see if he really does. They kind of want us to go gluten-free for a month to see if that kind of helps out his symptoms and things like that.
Yeah, well, and hopefully he isn't having issues with gluten, because especially for a kid, that can be so dramatic, you know, so just awful. You know, you go to a party and you can't have the cake.
Exactly, and his birthday is coming up, so we have to figure out something for that.
Well, they do have a gluten-free cake mix. If you can't find it there, you know, let me know. I'll run over here, pick up a box, and ship it out to you.
All right, we will do that. Geocaching
question of the day. The Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is The Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it up on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Fellow geocacher The Wooden Radio asks, have you ever attended or hosted a meet-and-greet while on vacation? 42% of the gregarious geocachers that replied said they've either attended or even hosted a geocaching meet-and-greet while on vacation. So tell me, have you attended or hosted a geocaching meet and greet while on vacation? Want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight we are going to be talking about geocaching with your bicycle. And I know that this is something that interests me as a topic, because I've not ridden my bike in a long time. It's been, I know it was before, since we got married, and we've been married for quite a while now. So it's been since before that I've ridden my bike, and even quite a longer than that. And so I just got my bike fixed, and I've been starting to ride it to work. So I've never cached via bicycle. And so when our guest today kind of came to us and said that he does it and it'd be a good topic, I said, hey, that's perfect. Let's talk about it. So today we have Crashmore, and Daryl, you've cached my bike, correct?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've done quite a few, caches by bike. And, you know, one of the things that annoys me the most about caching by bike is when you've got those caches along the trail that are, you know, the minimum distance, because then it's just, you know, hop on, kick, okay, you're there.
Yeah.
All right, Crashbar, how about you? What do you like and really dislike in a bike cache?
Well, one of the things that I kind of, to give you a little background, I was a diehard geocacher for a couple of years and got kind of burnt out and transitioned to mountain biking, who has only recently come back to geocaching. So being short on time, one of the things that I've tried to do, I'm a new father of twins, so I don't get many kitchen passes. So what I've tried to do is combine my hobbies. So I got the idea to sort of combine my bike and geocache trips. And you're absolutely right. You will just drive yourself crazy if you think you're going to go out and power cache by bicycle. You'll spend so much time jumping on and off the bike that you waste your entire trip. You don't get a whole lot of mountain bike miles in, and you don't get a lot of cache finds in. But if you're looking to kind of maybe get some exercise, combine a couple of different hobbies, increase your range, because there's no doubt that if you're a mountain bike, you can cover much more ground via bicycle than you could just by hiking, or just kind of looking for new challenges. Biking, caching via bike is actually a great way to go in those instances.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to hear what you're going to have to talk about with the mountain biking, because, you know, I have a trail bike, but I had a mountain bike for a long time. You know, I'm just really more of a road cyclist. You know, I've got the touring bike and, you know, just narrow tires, and I just love getting that speed up. And there is some fun to be had just caching that way and using that instead of a car. So, you know, why don't we talk a little bit, though, to start off with, about equipment. And, of course, as always, anyone who's in the chat room that wants to pipe up, you know, and share whatever you have about your experiences or any input on what we're saying, you know, just hit the request to talk and we'll get you in and talk about it then. And Andy, you know, we can take some questions and comments and answers later too. So how do they go about doing that?
Sure. If you're listening to this as a podcast and not with us live tonight, give us a call on our voicemail, which that number is 206-3503-GPS. Leave us a voicemail and we'll get back to it and answer it probably next week's show. So obviously there's some equipment that's involved here in mountain biking. And, you know, the very first thing is obviously your bike. And so you guys have mentioned a couple different things here. You've mentioned the trail bike and you've mentioned a street bike, a road bike. What do you guys find, I guess, as far as if we're looking to maybe buy a bike, what kind of things should we look for? You know, I guess, you know, should we buy a mountain bike? Should we buy a trail bike? What are those type of things should we buy?
It really depends on what type of riding you want to do. If you're going to do more riding or if you want to do more caching, kind of combine the two. There's kind of a hybrid fitness bike that kind of runs right down the middle. It'll have a slightly wider tire than, say, a full-on road bike, but not quite as aggressive as a knobby tire, say, a full-on mountain bike. That would be something great for kind of crushed gravel, some light single-track duty. If you're going to do your caching by road, you're going to want to go with a road bike, obviously. A cross bike is actually another great example. It's sort of a beefy road bike. It'll have a slightly wider tire, knobby, but more of a road geometry, so it'll ride better on the road than it would putting a mountain bike on the road. That's a kind of a good way to go. If you know that you want to do full-on single track, spend most of your time in the woods, you definitely want to go with a mountain bike. There's a lot of different variety, and there's so many options. We could never cover them all in just the 30 minutes for this podcast. What I would highly suggest, if you're looking at buying a bike, stay away from the big box stores. You really owe it to yourself to look up your local bike shop, go in and talk to those folks. They'll steer you in the right direction for just a tiny bit more money in a lot of cases than what you would spend at a big box store. You can actually get a quality bicycle, have it professionally assembled, have the fit done. So fit is really important with a bicycle, and without getting the fit properly, you're just going to be miserable. So it's something else that a local shop can actually help you with. So my number one piece of advice is, if you're looking to buy a bike and don't yet have one, find your local bike shop, go in and talk to those guys. They'll be more than happy to kind of steer you in the right direction.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with that. And I can tell a little story about before I could afford a good bike, I went and got one of those cheap department store bikes, except I went, you know, as high-end as you could. And I would say we were popping tubes at least every 30 or 40 miles. And you know, that gets expensive. It, not to say that it isn't a big pain. So I got really good at fixing the bikes that way. But I was spending a fortune in the tubes and, you know, in parts to fix them. Ended up getting wheels from a local bike shop. And never had a problem with that again, but of course had problems with everything else. Went out and spent about two times as much as I had paid for the original bike. And never had a real problem with that bike of any consequence for 12 years. And I only got rid of that about 7 years ago, and it was just a real workhorse all along.
Obviously, safety is a huge thing when we're caching. And that's something that I think that I've come to a realization here as riding my bike here the last couple of weeks to work. You know, I'm riding on the street. A helmet is a huge thing. It's one of those things that you probably shouldn't be riding your bike without it, because if you fall yourself, if someone hits you, you're going to probably get hurt if you don't have a helmet on.
Yeah, no probably about it. You absolutely should never throw a leg over a bike without a helmet. I've had several instances, both I was hit by a car on the road a few years ago, and there's no doubt that a helmet saved my life. I don't think I'd be here otherwise. And beyond that, I've actually smacked a tree a couple times at pretty high speed on the trails, and again, if I hadn't been wearing a helmet, I'd be in real trouble. But besides just the kind of obvious wrecking and hurting yourself, you never know what can happen as far as a mechanical failure goes. And I actually had a good friend of mine that was riding a bike to a mailbox at the end of his driveway. It was less than a quarter of a mile, and he had a freak weld fail on this bike, and he went over the bars and was actually in the hospital for weeks because he didn't have a helmet on. So I just can't reiterate enough how important it is to wear a helmet. There's just no excuse not to get one and actually have it on every time you throw a leg over a bike.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I just like it so that those low-hanging branches don't scrape my head. Yeah, but yeah, it's one of those deals. I've seen too many people hurt myself, and you know, I'm just not even willing to, you know, even on like a quick test ride around the parking lot, I always put it on, especially on those test rides, because I've seen, you know, something go wrong and the wheels lock and you're next thing you know, you're on the ground.
Yeah, it's truly amazing how many people don't take that serious enough. I was out in Moab a few years ago riding Slick Rock, and I literally saw a family with big box store bikes going out on the famous Slick Rock Trail with no helmets. It was enough that I actually rolled over and had a talk with them. They didn't listen. They rolled out on it. But that kind of stuff just makes you cringe every time you see it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you'll find more often than not, those are the ones that seem to disregard the safety. But, you know, another big important safety tip, too, is if you do happen to have an impact with that helmet, consider the helmet dead, because it will get fractures in the foam, and you know the foam will get compacted and it no longer will give you that kind of protection.
I mean, another important part about helmets, you don't need to spend a lot of money to get a quality helmet. All the helmets here in the U.S. have to pass the same safety standards to be sold. So basically, you're just spending money for comfort, which a lot of times it's worth spending the money for, but to get the protection, you really don't need to spend more than $30 or $40 minimum. Will get you something to protect you.
Well, and I want to say that my first helmet that I bought was somewhere in the range of $70 or $80, and this is back in the late 80s. Now, you know, it's fairly rare to find a helmet that's that expensive on the shelf at most of the bike stores, unless you get into the really high-performance helmets. So you can get a good helmet. I want to say, I want to say the last couple of helmets I've picked up have been under $40.
Now, you guys had mentioned some things about blowing tubes, things like that. How can we take care of that on the trail? Like, you know, because obviously when we're on the trail, we're not going to be near a store, a local bike shop where we can go and get our bike fixed. How can we do that when we're on the trail?
Well, luckily, changing a tube is actually a really easy procedure to go through. That's another one of those things where a lot of times someone at the local bike shop can walk you through it, or there's videos online. Well, if you carry some basic, a couple of tire levers, to dismount the tire off of the rim, a pump, you can get a small frame pump that you could either keep in your Camelback or frame itself. And a patch kit is always a good, just in case, the worst case scenario. I generally carry two. I have a pretty big Camelback, which we can get to as another part. And I normally two to three tubes, and the, well, it's the pump, just in case the worst happens, because it seems last they tend to come in at least pairs. So I'll get one and another one on the way out.
Yeah, another one of the things that I like to carry is I've got a little kit that has the little CO2 cartridges that you can just pop it in and get a nice quick top off, because the pumps don't necessarily get you up to the pressure for some of the higher pressure tires as easily. So that does make it a little bit easier. But, you know, the tool that I've got that I really like is called an Alien Tube by Topeak. And it's got just about everything. It's in a small little package, doesn't weigh a whole lot. So if you're looking to buy a tool that does just about everything, that is a great tool, but you'll still want something probably for the removal of the tubes and the tires.
And a decent set of tire levels to add to that multi-tool is only going to set you back a few dollars.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes you can find these things in kits too. You know, especially with that patch kit.
And I will say, it is definitely worth taking the time to practice, hit the trail, get out from the car, and you're trying to change a tire for the first time. Take a few minutes at home before you head out with the procedure. It'll make it a lot easier should you need to change one on the side of the trail.
Yeah, and check, again, another good reason to have a local bike shop. Go check that local bike shop. A lot of them will have classes about how to go about doing all of these kind of repairs right on the trail, and they'll actually take you out sometimes in the backyards. Some of the park systems will actually team up and do the same kind of stuff. So you can do that in the park and get some real world experience trying to fix your flats or, you know, derailleur problems, whatever.
Now, obviously the big question here too is, how do we carry a GPS and ride a bike at the same time? And I know, you know, in driving, you can carry your GPS and drive at the same time. Not recommended, but you can. Now, your bike, it's going to be really hard to do that because you're trying to use both hands to steer, and especially if you're hitting over bumps and things like that. So I know that there are different mounts and things like that. What are you guys' recommendations for mounting your GPS to your bike?
Well, I've had a lot of, I've been using the Garmin mounts itself. I think there's some RAM mounts. I think maybe Daryl has some more experience with some of the other aftermarket mounts. But I've been using, and the nice thing about the Garmin mounts as of late is they have sort of standardized them, whereas before they were very specific to each model, like with the old eTrexes, I think you had to have a specific mount. It seems now GPS mount actually works. Oregon, Coda, which I have, pretty much all of the modern Garmin. And the way this, you kind of secure it to the handlebar, and it has kind of a back cover of the GPS and to that mount. I will give a warning with the Garmin mount particularly. I was out on the trail the first time that I actually, about a week and a half ago, this particular mount. And with the Garmin, you have to kind of slide it down and push it until it snaps well. It'll kind of fool you, and it won't be snapped in all the way. And I actually went over a log stack near dark doing some caching and had my GPS come off. And I didn't notice it until I was about a quarter mile down the trail. So luckily, I was able to backtrack and find it. So if you are using that, like I say, make sure that you actually hear it snap. Otherwise, that thing to bounce off terrain.
Yeah, and a good tip to help keep the GPS from going too far, if you do happen to lose it like that, is just take the lanyard and wrap it around the post for your mount, because that will help it. If it does happen to pop off, you have a chance usually to stop and pick it up before it, you know, falls in the dirt. But the RAM mounts are the ones that I happen to use, and they've got these things for just about everything you can imagine from... You know, you can't really get the laptops on the bike, but they've got the RAM mounts for your car to do like a laptop, and they'll go all the way down through small little MP3 players. So you have a nice variety of options there, all kinds of devices, anything you pretty much want. And what I found is generally the RAM mounts tend to be more secure than about anything else I've seen. And the nice thing is they have an extension on them, and you can pick up different arm lengths. So if you want to get that GPS up a little closer, it really is nice because it gets it up off the handlebars. You don't have to worry as much about the clutter. You know, I have a bike, a cycle computer, and the GPS on my handlebars. And by the time you get all that stuff on there, there's not a whole lot of other options on there for room. So... You know, it's nice to have that up on top of the headlight or on top of the cycle computer. Of course, if you do it that way, you need to make sure you can still see your cycle computer. But yeah, they're not universal mounts. These are specific to the GPS. So you'll have to get the one for your specific GPS, but they have a number of different options, and you can do a little bit of customization so that you can get exactly what it is that you want.
Now, that brings us to a point here. What makes exactly a good bike cache? Because like you talked earlier about, you know, if you're going to be trying to do lots of caches by bike, you know, do a power trial, that may not be the best thing. So what exactly does make a good bike cache?
I think as far as mountain bike cache, I look for single tracks, a great bike trail, something that's a little further out of my hiking range. So it would be, it's not uncommon. 20 and 30 mile mountain bike rides pretty regularly. So I like, you know, it's pretty tough to do a 10 mile hike. I can kind of take the time, enjoy the trail, go extend my range, enjoy the scenery. That's what I tip for. One thing to consider with that is not all trails allow bikes. So before you pack up the bike and hit a trail after a cache, you may want to check and make sure that the particular park you're going to does in fact allow mountain biking on those trails.
Yeah, and you'll find that a number of the trails don't allow for bikes. So, you know, especially the more sensitive nature trails, they tend to not allow bikes on. So, unfortunately, there are a lot of those caches that are not accessible.
Before we go on, I kind of want to apologize to people who are in the chat room live here. It seems like there's an issue with TalkShoe going on tonight that it's kind of cutting off Crash Mars' Mike, it's kind of cutting it in and out, in and out, in and out, and we really apologize for that. I really hope TalkShoe doesn't do this anymore, but we apologize that seems to be going on tonight.
All right, well, getting back to the good bike caches again. You know, we mentioned the distance between caches. You know, that is just kind of a real pain in the butt when you're on the bike if it's too short. So if you're doing those multiple caches, you know, kind of keep an eye on that. And one of the things that I've actually thought about doing, haven't had a chance to actually put into practice, is a lot of those trails are out and back. So I'll hit half of them on the way out and the other half on the way back so that I don't have to do the caches every time. And I'll get a little bit more distance so that when you're getting on that bike, you're not going for, you know, the 500 feet. You're going instead for, you know, 1,000 feet.
Yeah, that's actually a great piece of advice. I was going to say, it definitely doesn't speed things up when you're going out, but on out and back, it can make the return trip a little bit more pleasant if you're just riding back out to the car. Something else to keep in mind, the bike, if something's off the trail a little bit, a lot of times it's inconvenient to be rolling the bike through the woods, kind of trying to bushwhack with the bike. So what I've taken to doing is I'll go a little trail and kind of stash the bike and then make my way to the cache. With that, one piece of advice is if you're going to do that, mark the bike. it's even worse than losing the car. It can be pretty tough to go out there. You walk around in circles for a while, and then it's like, oh, my goodness, where did I drop the bike at? And then you're trying to follow your breadcrumbs back to it.
Yeah, and most of us don't have the bike alarms on the little key fobs to hit and figure out where they are.
Yeah, now that also brings up another good point, too. How do you guys recommend securing your bikes? Say if you, like, quickly, if you're doing a trail and you're going to have to go off the main trail, like if you're, you know, to find the cache, how do you recommend securing your bike so that someone that drives by doesn't just steal it?
Locks are always an option. I have to admit I'm pretty bad about this. You just kind of go off trail a little bit and kind of stash it. I haven't had a problem yet, knock on wood. But I guess in more urban areas or if there's a heavy traffic trail, usually there's trees and you could pretty easily utilize either one of the U-style locks, cable lock, and that kind of stuff could fit right in the Camelback and could go to the trail with you.
Yeah, and I tend to keep the bike within eyesight and never really leave it out of my sight, but when I do, I have a cable lock that I use from a Trek that's so many years old now I couldn't even tell you where I got it or how old it, or how much it cost at the time. But it, you know, you have to have a really big, thick lock with enough resistance so that you can't just grab a cable cutter.
Yep. Well, in this particular instance, too, you're just trying to keep the honest folks honest. And take the temptation out, because ideally, unless you're bike and stashing, be away from your bike for more than 10 or 15 minutes, hopefully.
Exactly. And, you know, if it's within eyesight, you really don't probably need to lock it up. You know, you're right there. You can see it. No one's really going to do too much.
Now, if anyone, like, obviously you can cover greater distance. There's a lot of advantages to going caching with the bike. We've covered a lot of really good things here. Again, if you guys have any good tips for us, or any tips at all, give us a call, 206-350-3GPS on our voicemail line. Now, guys, there's other information out there that people can get as far as biking and things like that. Where can we go to if we want to find out more information about biking?
Well, the first place I would recommend is just as we all have our local geocaching clubs. Most of your areas are going to have a local mountain biking or a local cycling. The first thing I would do is Google and try to find some of those folks. The enthusiastic folks geocaching, mountain bikers tend to be just as enthusiastic about getting new folks into riding. That can act a great resource as well. If you don't have anywhere local, there's a wonderful mountain bike forum, mtbr.com. There's a wealth of information on trails and discussions and stuff there. And outside of that, I would recommend one that I read when I first got started that really kind of covers the skills aspect of mountain biking, kind of how to navigate stacks, how to ride tight single track, ride switchbacks and such would be the Ned Overend MTB Bike Skills. I think Pro by Ned Overend on Amazon. That was a pretty good book. And if you want to brave doing some of your own maintenance, a wonderful book is The Art, Zen and the Art of Maintenance. It's actually a great resource to kind of learn about the works of mountain bike.
I'm sorry, the static kind of cut over you there. What was the book again?
There's two. One would be the Ned Overend Mountain Bike Like a Pro. That kind of goes over mountain biking skills, kind of techniques like riding log stacks, single tracks, switchbacks, and things like that. They're a little more advanced than just riding down the street. And the other book, to get into learning more about how you're biking and starting to maintain it yourself, would be Zen and the Art of Mountain Bike Maintenance.
Okay. Well, again, if anyone has any questions, give us a call, 206-350-3GPS. Leave us a voicemail. Thanks again, Crashmore, for coming on tonight. And again, we apologize heavily about the static. This is something that Up With talks to you tonight, the thing we use to do our live chat here. So again, I'm sorry. And thanks again for coming on. And again, leave us a voicemail or an email. We are xpunkx@geocachingpodcast.com. Daryl W4@geocachingpodcast.com. And we love to hear from you guys. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. If you found any value in the content of this podcast, please consider helping us make this show sound better by visiting geocachingpodcast.com and clicking on the donate link. We realize that there are many places you can spend your hard-earned cash. If you decide to donate, we'll be given a link to our Plus feed. Thank you. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail at 206-3503-GPS and leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.